This is Dick Bertel at the Springfield Museum of Science in Springfield, Massachusetts. Tonight, WTIC presents complete coverage of Mariner 4 as it flies by the planet Mars on an historic photo-taking mission. In the next few hours, many questions may be answered. Tonight, after 8 months of patient waiting, is the night of the encounter. Tonight's program will be an historic first from many standpoints, not the least of which is the method of transmission. Portions of our program will actually be broadcast on a beam of light known as a laser beam, which will be operated by the Perkin-Elmer Corporation in Norwalk, Connecticut. An historic radio broadcast first. Here in the auditorium of the Springfield Museum are gathered almost 250 people, some of the top scientists in the country who will be sharing this microphone with me throughout the course of the evening. The general public is here, too, to learn firsthand what man has been speculating about for thousands of years. What is the mystery of the red planet Mars? We may know tonight. Closed-circuit television cameras are relaying pictures of what is happening here at the Mars complex to other buildings in the area where hundreds of others are gathered to watch these events. In the front of the auditorium is a huge screen on which will be flashed pictures and drawings that pertain to the planet. Here in Springfield, we'll be talking tonight to Dr. Sanford Siegel, noted exobiologist with Union Carbide in Tarrytown. Dr. Siegel has been conducting extensive experiments with life forms on a Martian atmosphere. Also here is Dr. Alan Hynek, noted astronomer and UFO investigator for the U.S. Air Force. We have a direct line to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, and you'll be hearing exclusive WTIC reports as well as general reports released by JPL to radio and television networks and to the press. With me now is Dick Hoagland, curator of astronomy and space science at the Springfield Museum of Science. And Dick, what has happened to this point?
Well, according to our information on a pre-programmed list released by JPL and also updated by current activity via our line, the spacecraft has been given about four commands. The first command to start the scan platform, to start the camera moving in an up and down plane to make sure that the motor is turning it so that it may aim toward Mars. The second command later on this afternoon, which stopped the platform at a preset angle so that as Mariner sweeps by the planet Mars at about 11,000 miles an hour, the camera will intercept the planet and begin taking those vital photographs. And just a few minutes ago, just before we went on the air, there was confirmation that the narrow or the wide angle sensor, a large telescopic device is looking at Mars now. For the first time in history, a spacecraft is looking down at the planet Mars, 134 million miles away, as Mariner 4 flies by.
The Mariner 4 spacecraft, which starts shooting pictures of Mars tonight, is just one step in a project that began 5 years ago and has cost about $125 million so far. The 21 or so pictures in this latest shot will cost about $6 million apiece. The ultimate goal of the Mariner project is to make a manned landing on Mars, but this probably won't come until around 1973, and before that step is taken, an attempt will be made to put an instrument package on the red planet to send back scientific data. With its space camera trained on Mars from a range of 9,438 miles, Mariner 4 is scheduled to begin taking the first of its pictures at 8:20 tonight in just about 10 minutes. The last of the pictures will be taken at about 8:45 to 8:50, and at that time, the camera, wearing a 30-power telescope to see better, will be only 6,770 miles from the surface of the planet. The spacecraft itself will make its closest approach to the Martian surface 18 to 20 minutes later. The Earth-sent device will be at that point only 5,412 miles from Mars, and then it will disappear behind Mars. At 7:41 tomorrow morning, our time, the Mariner 4 tape recorder turns on to send about 1 hour of scientific information to Earth across a void more than 134 million miles wide. After that information is cleared, the machine will begin relaying the first picture. Each one will take about 8 hours and 35 minutes to complete. And I assume, Dick, that we'll have those first pictures at about, oh, sometime Friday morning. At least the general public will have them.
Either Friday morning or Friday afternoon, and we're going to be talking more about those pictures later on, but let's wait until we know whether that tape is going to record any yet.
Dick, let's talk right now about the laser beam, which it is hoped will broadcast a portion of this show a little later. First of all, we are not using the laser beam now, and for a very good reason. I wonder if you'd fill us in on the background of that.
It's foggy. The laser is a beam of light just like any other light. It can be stopped by the Earth's atmosphere. The fog is now rolled in across Springfield. We expect it to clear within about an hour or a little less. This beam of light is not like light in that it is coherent. It is like a radio wave or a set of radio waves traveling like soldiers, one behind the other, in perfect step.
Now, Dick, let's take a look at what we hope to discover tonight. In addition to the pictures, of course, which we're all very much concerned about, there are many other experiments which will be conducted tonight, not the least of which is the occultation experiment. What is the occultation experiment?
Well, scientists are very anxious to know more about the Mars atmosphere. As you know, Mars is a planet which has an atmosphere. This can be seen because we have photographed clouds and we have photographed the planet in various colored light, and it appears different sizes.
At this point, I think, Dick, we might call on Dr. Alan Hynek, the noted astronomer and UFO investigator for the U.S. Air Force, who is with us tonight. Dr. Hynek, if I may ask you, first of all, to move into the microphone so that we can hear you clearly. How do you feel about the experiments tonight? I saw a smile of pleasure cross your face, of course, when it was announced that the picture-taking sequence had indeed been started. What are your reactions tonight?
I'd like to be in communication with Kepler and Tycho Brahe. I should think that they would really, really enjoy this.
Dr. Hynek, I'm going to interrupt here for just a minute, and we are going to talk about the canals on Mars. News is happening in other parts of the world as well, and of course, we want to bring you up to date on that. So at this point, we're going to take 5 minutes out for NBC News on the Hour to return at 9:05 to the Springfield Museum of Science in Springfield, Massachusetts. This is WTIC 1080 on your dial in Hartford, Connecticut. 9:00.
Be alert to news as it happens on the NBC Radio Network. WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut.
This is Dick Bertel back at Mars Complex at the Springfield Museum of Science in Springfield, Massachusetts. We had information from NBC that the tape recorder had not turned off, as you heard just a few moments ago, and this is contrary to information that we have here. So just to confirm it, we have a situation where everything is green, all systems are acting and working properly. We're going to call in Dick Lewis on our special jet propulsion laboratory line in Pasadena, California. Dick, have you heard anything to the contrary? Is everything working as it should?
There is a fear among the people who have been examining the telemetry that the tape recording device may not have shut off after each picture as it was supposed to do. If this was the case, then the total number of pictures taken by the camera and recorded, or the total number of pictures recorded on the tape, would be reduced from the maximum of 21 to a maximum of 7 or 8. However, there is a considerable amount of optimism that all of the pictures have been recorded and will be played back in the ensuing days.
Dick, I just want to mention that your voice is once again being carried by laser beam here in Springfield, Massachusetts. This is an historic broadcast first. I want to clarify something with you. As I understand it, the tape recorder is designed to stop when the shutter of the camera is closed and then to start up again when the shutter opens. Is that true?
That's right.
All right, so that if the tape recorder did continue and did not stop, there would be long periods of blank spaces, so to speak, on the tape. Is that it?
That's right. It would be analogous to a motion picture camera running when the shutter is, when the lens cap is on, the operator forgetting to shut it off. It would simply mean that not as many, it would come to the end of the roll before all of the pictures had been taken.
All right, Dick Lewis, we're going to terminate our conversation at this point, but I hope you will stand by so that we can call you in again in a few minutes. Thank you, Dick Lewis.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt at this point. We have Fred Stone on our special telephone line now. Fred Stone is with Raymond Engineering Laboratories in Middletown. Fred, I'm sure you've been listening to reports of the Mariner 4's progress, and do you have any theories that you might advance as to the question regarding the possibility that the tape recorder did not shut off between pictures?
Well, as it was mentioned, this is, at this point, just a possibility. The situation hasn't really been proved. But as far as the operation of the tape recorder is concerned, it is under control of the data automation system.
Frank, can you stand by for just a moment, please? We have a direct report from Mariner Control, and then we'll be back.
This is Mariner Control. At the present time, the data from the television period, photographic period, is still being reviewed. There is as yet no resolution of the apparent anomaly between the data information which was sent during the process and the data information which was sent on the basis of stored data after we returned to the mode 2 data transmission.
Fred, I don't know if you were able to hear that report, but the situation is still indeterminate as far as the tape recorder is concerned. Now, I wonder if you'd continue.
Well, Dick, as I started to say, the tape recorder is under control of the data automation system. It receives a start command at the beginning of each picture and a stop command at the end of each picture. These are commands which come to the tape recorder from a system external to it. In a tape recorder, there is one device, a relay, which actually stops and starts the motor. So we have, from our standpoint, two possibilities, an external problem or a problem with this particular relay.
I'm going to interrupt you again, Fred, for another report from Mariner Control.
6:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. The Mariner has passed its closest approach to Mars and is now slowly moving away from it. The distance to the surface of Mars from the Mariner is, at this time, 7,163 miles. Repeat, distance from Mariner to the surface, 7,163 miles.
A reminder, you're listening to The Night of Encounter over WTIC in Hartford. On our special telephone line now is Fred Stone of Raymond Engineering Laboratories in Middletown, Connecticut. Fred was the project engineer for the Mariner 4 tape recorder. And Fred, you were saying there were two possibilities of something going wrong. What were they, Fred?
Well, this is really, really off the cuff and taking a very quick look at the situation, Dick. As I mentioned, the recorder is under control of the data automation system, which controls the various steps involved in taking the pictures, which is quite a complicated operation. It involves, as you've heard already, controlling the shutters of the camera as well as starting and stopping the tape recorder. There's a possibility that this command system external to the recorder system, there's a possibility that there's trouble there. There's also a possibility that a latching relay in the recorder has gone into the running condition and stayed that way.
Fred, if the tape recorder failed to turn itself off, or if the guiding information into the tape recorder failed to activate it, would we still have, let's say, 6, 7, or 8 clear pictures?
Well, as I said, that the command that was issued from the ground, the DC-26 command, would remove power.
Mm-hmm.
So that in spite of any of these malfunctions that we have been guessing about, the recorder would stop operating in the record mode.
At this point, I might add that your voice
and mine are being broadcast once again by a laser beam. This is rather historic first for a commercial broadcast, the use of a laser beam, and I think it's rather interesting that we're able to use something like this on a program as historic as this, because the laser beam will one day be used, I'm sure, for interplanetary communication. Fred, is there anything else that you can add to the picture from your standpoint right now?
See, not really. It's very difficult to try and guess just exactly what's going on. I think that possibly we should really sit tight and see what other information JPL has to offer in the next couple of hours.
All right, Fred, and would you stand by so that we can call you again if we need you?
Certainly, be very glad.
Okay, Fred, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
That was a report from Fred Stone of Raymond Engineering Laboratories in Middletown, which developed the tape recorder on Mariner 4.
We're attempting to call in Dr. Richardson right now at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. And Dr. Richardson will be reporting what is happening out there for us in just a moment. I'm going to test it right now. Dr. Richardson, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, you are, sir. Fine. Good.
The part that always intrigued me tremendously is that the region over which the so-called W marking appeared in 1954 and 1958.
This is the cloud formation that you're referring to?
Why, presumably it's a cloud formation. It's the most amazing looking thing. Nobody would believe it unless we and other people had actually photographed it. It looks like skywriting. In 1958, it very distinctly, the markings of this W or M if you turn Mars upside down. We have identified it. You can identify it with canals and oases on the surface.
Isn't it true, Dr. Richardson, that one sees Mars in a reverse or upside down picture and that it could very well be an M rather than a W?
Oh, yeah. You see, if it is an M, it stands for Mars. If it's the other way around, the W stands for war. Take your choice.
Have other clouds, other unusual clouds, been observed on Mars?
Why, oh yes, there are yellow clouds and these blue clouds. And in 1956, apparently a dust cloud showed up and covered everything on Mars, on our side, just when it was most favorably situated for observation.
Was a polarization measurement made of that cloud by any chance?
Not that I know of, no.
I see.
As far as we know, there are just these two little ones, Phobos and Deimos, discovered in 1877, the same year as the canals. Their size is rather uncertain. Phobos is a little the larger, say, you can make it almost anything you like within reason.
It has been speculated, hasn't it, Dr. Richardson, that these are rather unusual orbits, much like our own satellites that we have been sending up over the past 7 or 8 years?
Fairly circular.
Does this lead to speculation that perhaps they are not natural?
Oh, yes. Resulted from an article published by a Russian whose name I can't possibly remember. If I could, I couldn't pronounce it.
Shlovsky.
Well, yeah, I guess when you begin to examine his paper, it doesn't sound so crazy quite as it seems at first. What he apparently did was to assume that it was hollow in order to explain an apparent anomaly in its motion. You see, if it was thin, just a hollow shell, it would be more affected by drag of the upper atmosphere than if it were like a ball bearing, for example. So he assumed, made that assumption for that reason. However, many experts still don't agree there is anything wrong with its motion. And I'm personally very skeptical.
Well, of course, I think that you'd have to agree if they were artificial satellites, it would be indicative of some sort of life on the planet Mars, wouldn't you say?
Why, yes. I don't see how there can be any doubt about it.
We've just received a report that Mariner Control is about to give us another report, Dr. Siegel, so we take you directly to our line to Pasadena, California.
This is Mariner Control. At the present time, the Mariner spacecraft has moved to position 9,492 miles from the surface of Mars. It is now slowed down to a speed of 10,955 miles per hour. To repeat, distance from the surface, 9,492 miles. Speed, 10,955 miles per hour.
That report from Mariner Control in Pasadena, California, on our direct line 3,000 miles away. And in about 16 minutes, the occultation will take place, and we'll be bringing you reports on the progress of that here on our special program. Well, Dr. Siegel, we have a portable microphone now, and let's move over to one of your experiments and take a look at it. I think we can talk more clearly that way. We have a huge bell jar here. I guess you'd call it a bell jar. And growing out of this red surface, which we can presume is very much like that of the planet Mars,
yes,
are some cacti from where? From one of our deserts?
Yes, this is these are cacti just ordinarily present in the California desert.
How are they doing?
Extremely well. In the 7 or 8 months that this exhibit has been set up, two of the cacti have actually grown new shoots, and one of the other plants, an aloe, which is a native of North Africa, has also shown new growth. Dwarf palm trees in here have maintained themselves in perfect condition, and of course, during all this time, these plants have received no water.
They seem very healthy indeed. Now, in addition to being in what we can assume is a Martian-type soil, they are breathing a Martian-type atmosphere if plants do indeed breathe. Is there carbon dioxide present in that atmosphere?
Yes. In fact, the Martian atmosphere runs to easily 100 times more carbon dioxide than is present in the Earth's atmosphere.
Now, is there oxygen in this atmosphere as a result of these plants continuing to live?
Well, this, of course, would not be a perfect experimental setup, since these plants are in a closed system where they are exposed to light, even if it isn't very bright, and therefore they can make oxygen. However, I might point out that this has been more than once suggested as the possibility for the day in the future when we do try to establish operational bases on Mars, that putting earthly plants under a plastic dome and letting them build up oxygen may be a very effective, if slow, means for building up a habitable atmosphere for man.
Well, if there were plant life on the planet Mars, wouldn't we be able to detect oxygen, or at least more oxygen than we are able to find in the atmosphere?
I would say that this is a prejudice we acquire from the fact that all of the oxygen, or practically all of the oxygen in the atmosphere of the Earth, as it is at present, was derived from biological sources by the process of photosynthesis. However, it is also true that in certain plants, particularly those growing in aquatic surroundings, water plants, and those growing in the desert, for very different reasons, they tend to become essentially isolated from their environment, in the case of desert plants, by a very thick cuticle or skin, so that the processes whereby oxygen and carbon dioxide are involved in the life activities are, you might say, internalized. And not a great amount of these gases escapes into the outside atmosphere, in the case of the cactus. In the case of water plants, this is even more pronounced. Living in a watery environment where there is only a minute amount of oxygen, these plants nevertheless carry within their hollow or very, very light stems great amounts of oxygen. So the fact that it is not present in the atmosphere in large amount proves nothing at all about the capacity of prospective Martian plants to produce it and handle it internally.
What is the composition of this Martian soil?
Here we are far away from any exact knowledge.
Yes, I'm talking specifically about what is in this bell jar.
Yes, well, of course, what we strive to do is duplicate as much as possible the environment. Here we have an oxide of iron. In effect, this is nothing more than a high-grade iron ore called hematite. Two kinds of iron oxide are commonplace. One is called limonite and is yellowish. The other is hematite and is the reddish color. Now, of course, the color of Mars is more of a red, of an orangish, than true bright red. But this is a good approximation.
We're getting another report in from Mariner Control, and I think perhaps we had better take it so that we can get the latest information.
Mariner Control. An updating of trajectory data based on tracking information received during the passage near Mars has given a new estimate of the time at which the spacecraft will pass behind the planet from the point of view of Earth, the time of the beginning of occultation. According to the best estimates on the current best available trajectory, occultation should begin at 7:19 and 11 seconds Pacific Daylight Time. The spacecraft should reappear on the other side of the planet at 8:13 and 4 seconds Pacific Daylight Time.
That report from Mariner Control in Pasadena. One more question, and then we're going to take 5 minutes for news, Dr. Siegel. The plants have been subjected to a Martian atmosphere for some time now. Have you ever exposed any of these plants to a normal atmosphere again, an Earth-like atmosphere?
One of the most dramatic things that we've experienced is that the plants that have had a long sojourn in the Martian atmosphere or in similar experimental atmospheres will frequently, when brought back into air in a single step, die by shriveling up and discoloring within a matter of a few hours. One of the most dynamic things that we've seen, and at least to some extent there's a one-way track here. Once a living organism gets adapted to a new environment, its ability to cope with its familiar earthly environment definitely changes.
That is a very interesting observation, I think. We're going to pause for station identification right now. This is WTIC 1080 on your dial in Hartford, Connecticut. The time is exactly 10 o'clock.
Right.
That was Bill Pomeroy, and as Bill just reported, he is going to try to allow us to hear the sound of Mariner 4 as it begins to move behind the planet Mars during the occultation, and perhaps you can actually hear the difference in the frequency as it begins to move through the Martian atmosphere, much as the sun changes its color during sunset as it moves through the atmosphere or has to shine through a thicker part of the atmosphere. Now, Dr. Hynek, I can't resist asking you, and I'm going to. You investigated for the Air Force reports of unidentified flying objects. Do you have anything to comment on regarding the rash of reports during this latest flap, as they call it, I believe, that we're experiencing right now? I'm thinking of Portugal and the Antarctic and so on.
Well, the Air Force, I've been checking with them just today on that, but since these occurred in other countries and have not been officially reported to the Air Force has no jurisdiction to go in and investigate. So all I know about them is what I've seen in the papers.
I might also add at this point that it is being carried to our listeners by a laser. A laser beam carrying a signal from 134 million miles in space, which actually doesn't exist right now. Hear the difference in the frequency.
There we go.
Excuse me, Marvin. Bill Pomeroy is standing by at JPL. Bill, we had a signal on the air which we were convinced was that of Mariner 4, and we still had it on our amplifiers after JPL announced that they were no longer receiving it. Can you clarify us as to what was taking place, what we were hearing?
All I can clarify, Bob, is that apparently we were not getting the signal from the spacecraft, but receiving some other signal. We were equally confused here. All of us stood around listening, waiting for that signal to stop, and it failed to do so.
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of simply someone tuning in the wrong circuit. So that was not the signal from the spacecraft that you heard.
Well, we're a bit disappointed in hearing that, Bill, but also relieved that you were listening to the same thing we were and that we didn't have a bad tube and an amplifier here or something of that nature.
Well, I certainly am sorry, and let me say that you weren't alone in your disappointment.
This is Dick Bertel speaking to you once again from the Springfield Museum of Science, where we are now waiting for the occultation to come to an end, at which time we hope to bring you a special report from JPL and perhaps, in addition, the sounds of Mariner 4 as it reappears from behind the disk of Mars.
Let's make one more switch now to the landlines, if we may. Let us switch now to the landline circuit.
We are now speaking to you again conventionally. You can hear the difference, I'm sure, and without any more hesitation, let's switch back once more to the laser beam.
And we're going to say goodnight via the laser beam, which I think is a thrill in itself. I have so many people to thank for tonight's broadcast, and I'm going to do just that right now. First of all, let's thank our reporters at the Jet Propulsion Laboratories in Pasadena, California, who reported directly for us here in Springfield tonight. Science reporter Dick Lewis, Bill Pomeroy, public information officer from NASA in Washington, who spoke to us directly. Frank Bristow, senior public information officer at the Jet Propulsion Laboratories. And Dr. Robert Richardson, noted astronomer, formerly of Mount Wilson and Palomar Observatories, and a well-known Mars specialist who was on the scene especially for us. To our guests here in Springfield, Dr. Sanford Siegel, exobiologist specializing in Martian life, Dr. Alan Hynek, noted astronomer at Northwestern University, Marvin Fenton of Perkin-Elmer Corporation in Norwalk, and of course Richard Hoagland, curator of space science and astronomy at the Springfield Museum of Science. Our engineer supervisor tonight was Fred Edwards. Our engineers at Proven Mountain, Bob Schirego at the Springfield Museum, Dick Zwirko at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Bob Thornton of California Sound. Our producer was Chuck Reno. This is Dick Bertel speaking to you from the Springfield Museum of Science. Good night.